Okay, Rabotai, today's daf in the Sechet Beitzah, our new world that we've just entered, but I think we're pretty deep in, is daf Gimel. And let's remember what we've been talking about. We had ourselves a Mishnah in which the Mishnah listed three different machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, which were only related through a very broad definition of what we're talking about over here. And that had to do with questions of Isurei Achila on Yom Tov and the definitions of Yom Tov versus Shabbos and so on. We're going to see how this fits in to our Masechet overall. The first thing that we spoke about was a very strange case about an egg that's born on Yom Tov, meaning, again, the Lashon of Nolad doesn't make sense in English, but in Hebrew, Nolad would mean to be hatched. To be laid, sorry, on Yom Tov. And so the question was, why would there be a machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as to whether it's mutter to eat, or the way the Gemara seems to say, or even to handle, to move, this beitzah? So it turned out that this was one of the cases that Beit Shammai is lukula, Beit Hillel is lachumra, and it turns out that they were arguing, according to Reb Nachman, which we'll call approach number one, they were arguing about the dinim of muktzah and nolad. So that the only way that we could understand the Mishnah that would have anything to do with muktzah at all is that we're talking about, as the Reb Nachman insists, we've got to be talking about the idea of a tarnagolet that is there for the purposes of laying eggs. Therefore, the tarnagolet was not oimid l'achila this yomtet, so the egg is not considered to be just part of something that was oimed l'achila, and it's coming to tell me that aliba de Beit Hillel in the dinim of Yom Tov, there is an iser neilad, which is a type of muktzah. And so there's an iser muktzah and an iser neilad, and the only problem that we had with that pshat was that the same machlokas ought to apply even to the tarnagolet itself. So why talk about the nolad issue? And that was a little bit of a problem, because the only justification we had to tell me the nolad was to say that even according to Beit Shammai, that the nolad would be mutter, which is all very nice, because, I mean, nolad ought to be more chomer than just a regular muktzah, since it just seems to have appeared out of nowhere. And the Gemara says still it's not good enough, because it could have just thrown in both. Could have said tarnagolet and the beitzah. That way we would have known the halacha, according to Beit Hillel, is nogea the tarnagolet itself, not only the nolad, and we would have also known the koyach hatera of Beit Shammai. So the Gemara was not convinced that Reb Nachman was the correct approach. Despite that, as we mentioned, the Rambam paskins, as does the Rif, paskins anyway, like Reb Nachman, which we're going to see is a little bit of a problem as I continue with this review. And that is this. The next shot that we had was an absolutely stunning chiddush of Rabbah. He says, no, we are not talking about muktzah, and we're not talking about nolad, and we're not even talking about a tarnagolet that is omed et legadel beitzim, and therefore there's nothing to discuss in terms of muktzah. We're talking about a tarnagolet that is meant to be eaten. So you'll say, oh, I don't understand, if it's meant to be eaten, then if I could eat the tarnagolet itself, why in the world wouldn't I be able to eat the beitzah that it lays? It doesn't make any sense. Isn't that uchlo de ifra? And so Rabbi says, look, this is a whole new world. This is not the normal din of muktzah at all. You're 100% right. By the way, according to Reb Nachman, we came out with a brilliant insight, remember, that we're going to be more machmer on muktzah on Yom Tov, and we will go according to Rabbi Yehuda, than we would be on Shabbos, where we go according to Rabbi Shimon, who has a much more limited sense of where muktzah would apply. The way we understood it all from the second Shabbat is that the Gemara means literally that Rabbi Shimon does not hold a muktzah at all, meaning he never will accept a case where something all on its own is considered to be muktzah. There's no such thing. It's obviously possible for you to set something aside. That's not called muktzah, that's called haktza'ah. But for something just to be muktzah is not possible. And that would be the way that we paskin vis-a-vis Shabbat, but not Yom Tov. Because Yom Tov, again, as the Gemara says, Yom Tov, we're worried that people are going to be more mako because they're used to the idea that on Yantam you're allowed to cook and so on and so on. So who knows where it will carry them away. Okay, now, Rava says, not so. This is not a Yantav and Shabbos distinction at all. And it has nothing to do with books. It has to do with this brand new idea, which is called Hachana. Hachana de Rava, we call it, in order to honor the discovery. So it's Newtonian gravity. This is Rava-ish, the Hachana. Okay, so now if that's the case, what is this Hachana de Rava? Well, we know that the Gemara is saying that Hachana de Rava means that since the Torah says that Vayava Yom HaShishiva Yachinot HaShayaviyu, that in order to be able to, this is how Rashi understands, in order to be able to eat something on Yantav, or to be able to eat something on Shabbos, it has to be predefined as what it is that you intend to be your meal for Shabbos or Yantav. And that can be done only on Friday, meaning only on a day of the week. It can't be done from another Shabbos. That is to say, another type of Shabbos, Yantav being a Shabbos type thing. You can't prepare on Shabbos for Yantav. And you can't prepare from Yantav, obviously for Yantav. I meant the other way around. You can't prepare from Yantav for Shabbos, you can't prepare for Shabbos for Yantav. And therefore, our problem over here, according to Rava, is really based on a case where Yantav comes out on a Sunday, but because of that case, we answered all Yomim Tovim, and that would be a gezerah because we're worried that people will forget about this very important Hachana de Rava. So we answer all Yomim Tovim, we end up answering all Shabbatot in case something was mukhan from before. Now this is Rashi's approach. Tosfos disagrees with the idea that you need to prepare something. You don't need to prepare something. If it wasn't prepared at all, there's no problem. The problem is only if it were prepared on a Yontif day for Shabbos or a Shabbos day for Yontif. But let's say it was prepared on Yontif for Yontif. That's okay. You don't need to set it aside before. You could have just decided today you want it for Yontif. So that's a very big departure from Rashi's approach. And the same thing is true, of course, on Shabbos. It's going to be making for itself. It was something that wasn't ready. Make it ready now, that also would be fine. It's only the Isser part. It's not the positive part, according to Tosfos. That's a very different way of looking at it. And what I want to show you now is that, according to the Rambam, we have an extremely different idea about the whole structure of the... this is true according to Rif as well. We've got this difference between the way that the simple reading of the Gemara gives us, and that's clear because the Gemara seems to have rejected Reb Nachman, and yet the Rambam paskins like Reb Nachman. So, but the really weird thing is that that the Rambam not only paskins like Reb Nachman, he also paskins like Rava, who seems to only be here because he's against Reb Nachman. And even worse than that, Rambam says that the din of Hachana de Rava is a gezerah. But the whole meaning of the Gemara over here is that we learned it out of the Pasuk, and we're going to see today that the Gemara says beferish, that it's a dioraisa. So the Rambam just has everybody flummoxed. Like, what in the world is he talking about? And it's a classic Rambam in which it only makes sense when you take all of Shas together and recognize what is really going on. And it's once one recognizes it, it's an absolutely stunning different approach to our subject. But first, let's take a look at a couple of alternative explanations. You think we've gotten through all of them just in these few dafim. We're going to keep coming up with alternative explanations. But now today, we're going to talk about two other possible explanations from our Mishnah that are very similar to each other. And that is that if you don't hold a Hachana de Rava, or now remember, you could still hold a Hachana de Rava and not hold of Rava's explanation over here. Because Rava's explanation is based not only on his own discovery of Hachana de Rava. Rava is also based on a couple of other big assumptions. Assumption number one is that Hachana applies as an Isser even if nobody did anything. Nobody did anything to get this Beitzah ready on Yantif for the next day or for Shabbos for the next day, right? Just happened by itself. No, it's not necessarily implied in the Yachinu that if in nature did something that prepared on an Erev Shabbos that was Yontem, that it would be Usher on Shabbos. It only implied that you can't do something, and Rabbah wants to even apply that to a natural process, correct? This is why Rashi felt himself compelled to understand that the issue of Hachonah is a positive demand to make certain that this was taken care of as even an articulated conscious determination that this is what I'm going to eat. Therefore, the preparation by nature, whatever wants to say, you want to say, is certainly not a conscious presentation, right? I mean, so therefore, it's a little bit easier, according to Rashi, to understand why Rabbah would take that leap of suggesting that it's even true of a natural process. That's more difficult, according to Tosafos. Furthermore, let's also recognize that the other thing that Rabbah made as an assumption was a scientific assumption. And that was that if the egg was laid today, then that means that the final stages in the preparation of the egg shell and so on to make it finished for laying needed to be accomplished inside the chicken the day before. And so if it was laid today, then we have to take for granted that it was Nigmar yesterday, and that would mean that the Achron was yesterday. So that means there's two assumptions that are in addition to the discovery of Achron to Rabbah. If you don't want to go along with Rabbah on this, as the Gemara is going to say, the next two approaches by Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yitzchak reject it, it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't hold of Achron to Rabbah entirely. They may hold of the idea of Achron to Rabbah, but they may not hold that it applies here because of those two additional assumptions. That's just important to recognize on the side. Now, what are these two additional approaches? So, says the Gemara today, Rabbi Yosef Amar, Rabbi Yosef says, look, I have a different approach over here. We are talking about a tarnagolet that is omedet l'achila, in that I go along with Rabbah, there's no problem of mupsa whatsoever. There's a problem of the similarity of an egg that is laid on Yontev to a fruit that falls off of a tree. And what's the problem of fruit that falls off of a tree? Well, if the fruit falls off of the tree, we have a gezerah, as we'll see. And that gezerah is that we are afraid if we allow people to go around and collect fruits that are falling off of trees, they're going to climb up the tree and they're going to pick fruits. A reasonable gezerah. Since an egg that falls out of a chicken bears some resemblance, that's very strange, to a fruit that falls off of a tree. So what the Gemara takes for granted now at the beginning is that Rabbi Yosef is claiming, well, if we allow people to walk over to their IKEA cabinets and pick up an egg that suddenly appeared in their IKEA cabinet, what's to prevent them from walking under their olive trees, which are right next to the IKEA cabinet, and picking the olives off of the ground? And if we allow them to pick the olives off the ground, the next thing you know is they're going to climb up on a ladder and pick some olives. Now, that's sort of a multi-stage gezeira, isn't it? And that's exactly what the problem that Abaya has with Rabbi Yosef is. I'm like, wait a minute over here. Perot Anoshim, time of mind. Why are Perot Anoshim Bechlal also? Because of a gezeira, Shema Yalev Yitlosh. So maybe you'll climb up on a ladder and you'll pick your olives, right? So, I mean, what exactly are you going to do for this egg? I mean, you're going to call a bunch of vets and you're going to open up the chicken, you know, make an operation to get the egg out and then sew it up again. I mean, after all this, what in the world? So, I mean, this is, you're telling me it's a gzeira that if I allow you to eat the egg, that you're going to come to eat the olive. And if you eat the olive, then you're going to come to pick the olive. I mean, ego for gzeira. Didn't we say yesterday, you're not even allowed to make a gzeira like gzeira. So how does this make any sense? No, you misunderstood Rabbi Yosef completely, says the Gemara. What we're talking about over here is a single gezerah. That is to say, it has nothing to do with the question of if we let you take up the egg, then you'll also take up the fruit, and from there, that's not the idea. The idea was how did we define initially the Isser of Perot HaNoshrim? That was the question. And Perot HaNoshrim was defined lichatchila as anything that was connected initially to the source of its place of growth cannot be used on Shabbos if it's, or Yontav if it disconnects. That's the way we defined it. Having given it that definition, then we realized, ooh, that includes an egg. Yep, it does. But that's how you define the Isser. Okay, so then it's all one Gezerah. It's not a Gezerah like Gezerah. Rabbi Yitzchak says, look, I agree to the basic approach of Rabbi Yosef, but I don't think that the Gezerah is because of its being included in as the single Gezerah of how we define Perot HaNoshrim. I find that to be far-fetched. But what I think it's more like, it's more like having an Isser of Mashkim Shezofu. Now, Mashkim Shezofu means if you have fruit that are leaking out, you've got some grapes and they were actually, they were just plain grapes. You put them in a plastic container and then you come back on Shabbos morning and now these grapes have been dripping grape juice. Okay, so you'll have some grape juice for Kiddush. No, you won't, because we assert utilizing the grapes as the liquid that oozes out of the grapes. Again, why? Because you may come to squeeze the grapes. So it's sort of similar to the idea of the perot, except over here we're worried not about your picking perot, but about your squeezing perot. If you squeeze perot on Shabbat, then you're going to be over on a malacha d'oraisa, which is disha, as opposed to the question of being over on katsira, which Rabbi Yosef was saying, which I don't think an egg is similar to katsira. I think it's similar to disha. Okay, to which Abaya said the same thing. What? The only reason that you're not allowed to drink that grape juice is because of a gezerah, right? So what was time of my? Was gezerah shem yischot, you make up to squeeze the grapes. So again, we're talking about what exactly you're going to do. You're going to squeeze the chicken. Yeah! And you squeeze it so hard till you get it to get... No. Then you'll have a broken egg. You will not get an egg out of a chicken by squeezing the chicken. So Elamai, what you're saying is that if we allow you to have the chicken, I'll present you with an egg, then of course you're going to come to think that a grape can present you with grape juice. I mean, this is a very creative kind of guy, you know? Okay. And if we allow you to do that, then when the grape does present you with grape juice, you'll squeeze the grape. You got to be kidding. I mean, if that isn't a gzera le gzera, I don't know what is a gzera le gzera. So what would that possibly mean, says the Gemara? Igufa gzera, vana nekum adigza gzera le gzera. And here as well, we come up with the same answer. It's kulo chode gzera hi. It's all considered to be one gzera because of the way that we defined it. That's something that was initially absorbed within another thing which subsumes it, something subsumed cannot be used on Shabbos. That's why we defined it. And having defined it that way, it would cover not only Mashkim Shezofu, but as a matter of course, because of the overly well-defined way that we created the Gezerah, which Chazal always do. What exactly is the issue? Since the issue is Disha, now this, by the way, this is not just arbitrary. Because since the issue is Disha, we set out to define the Gezerah in terms of Disha. So in other words, what is the problem with Disha? The problem with Disha is that you are separating out something that is absorbed within something else, right? So you're separating out the grain from the covering of the grain, so correct? But if that's the case, then the way to make the Gezerah is to address that exact issue. Look, we don't want you playing around on Shabbos with things that were initially subsumed within another thing, and therefore, because that is the meaning of Disha, we don't want you to come to Disha. But having defined it in that way, we discover that we have included, therefore, an egg from a tarnagol. It has nothing to do with the gzera for a gzera. Obviously, this is absurd, but it's because of the similarity of the scientific definition of the gzera. That's why I view it as being included in Mashkim Shezofu. Now, it's very clear. We've got four approaches now. One approach that it's talking about Muktzah, which means it's a Tarnagol, Tarnagolet that is Omedet Gadel Beitzim. and the others have nothing to do with Muktzah. It has to do with other issues. The other issues being, according to Rabbah, according to Rabbah, according to Rabbi Yosef, the other issue being the problem of its similarity to the way we defined Perot HaNoshrim on Shabbat. And according to Rabbi Yitzchak, the problem is the way that we defined the Gezerah of Mashkin Shezavu on Shabbat. Now, why exactly do all of these Pshatim reject their alternative? So, obviously, there's a very good reason for nobody wanting to say Reb Nachman's approach. Because, as we said, Kulik Reb Nachman Lo Amri, Reb Nachman's approach has that inherent problem of why not mention the Tarnagol itself if we're talking about the question of Nolad and Muktzah, since we could have done so very easily to include both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. That question we never answered. That was why they don't like Reb Nachman. Okay. Kirabah Nami Lo Amri, they don't like Rava's Pshat because they don't believe that there's an Isser of Achon. And as I explained before, that could be that they fundamentally don't believe there's such a thing, or it could mean that they don't believe it applies over here since it's a natural process. And therefore, or they might believe that there's no reason to think that the egg was finished yesterday in order to be here today. Okay, so that would explain why they wouldn't want to say Rava's approach. Why, however, now, I understand why nobody would want to say Reb Yosef's and Reb Yitzchak's approach. I mean, it's too similar to Gzera the Gzera, and it just seems a little bit wacko to call this Peros HaNoshrim. I mean, I understand that you could justify it. You could certainly understand why that would not be our preferred route to understanding the Mishnah. Okay, but why are Reb Yitzchak and Reb Yosef arguing? I mean, like, it's basically the same idea that they both have, right? So why did Reb Yosef not want to say, like, Reb Nachman? Like Reb Yitzchak. Well, because he says, listen, I mean, look, an egg is much more similar to a fruit in that both of them are solid food, you know. Mashenkin, if you're talking about comparing it to Mashkin Azavu, I mean, isn't it a little funny to compare a liquid issue to a solid? I mean, it's not a food, it's just a liquid drink. It's like a Zeya. And Reb Yitzchak doesn't want to hold up Reb Yosef. What was his problem? Because he says, look, there's a tremendous difference in terms of how logical it would be that we would include this within our definition of what the Gezerah is. After all, it really, really is much more similar to Disha, the way we would define Disha, being something that is included within something else, as opposed to the idea of Peirot. I mean, Peirot, basically, they've been there the whole time. The egg was not there the whole time. It was incorporated in something else. And therefore, I mean, what does it really look much more similar to? Much more similar to Disha. I mean, the question whether it's liquid or solid is that's not a meaningful thing. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yosef, we're looking at the likelihood of the human interpretation. It's a question of the user, not the nature of the Gezerah. According to Rabbi Yitzchak, it's much more a desire of matching up the idea of the Gezerah rather than to its user's thought that it would be similar. I don't care whether the user sees it as similar. You're right. The user won't see it similar, but who cares? You're right. One's a liquid, one's a solid, and so on and so forth. Okay. I feel that it's the Balua aspect of its similarity to Disha that is the main point. And you know what? It's interesting that it appears that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rabbi Yitzchak. You know why? Because Rabbi Yochanan, this is a little bit, it's not complicated, but it's just multiple steps. So keep track of what's happening on over here. What happens is that we want to show that Rabbi Yochanan took for granted that the issue of the Mishnah is because of Mashkim Shezavu, that the Gezerah of Beitza was like Reb Yitzchak. And in order to do that, we have to show you, when we want to show that somebody took something for granted, it's obviously much more difficult than if he said it. Reb Yochanan never said it. But take a look at this discussion and you will see that the discussion makes absolutely no sense unless that's Reb Yochanan's starting assumption, that it's got to be about Mashkin Shezavu. Because take a look at this. Rabbi Yochanan points out that there's a contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda's own shitot. Now, this contradiction is absolutely nutty. It's only a contradiction if you take for granted that the dinah of Beit Shemal Dabiyonta is because of Bashkim Shizofa, as you're about to see. So he says, look, on the one hand, it says in the Mishnah that we had in Shabbos that you're not allowed, Ein Sofatim Taperot Lotzimei HaMashkim. This is the classic Mishnah that describes the problem of leaky perot. So it says, you're not allowed to squeeze a pre on Shabbos. And even if it leaked out all on its own, it would still be usher according to the Tanna Kamma. And this is the basis of Reb Yitzchak's understanding of our Mishnah, right? It's because this Mishnah said that if it leaks out, it's going to be usher. So then the egg is similar to something that is leaking out. Reb Yehuda, however, says, it depends. If you're talking about fruit that initially you had set aside in order to squeeze, then that's the problem. But if you had set aside grapes to eat, so then why would I think that all of a sudden, just because they leaked, you're going to squeeze the grapes? On the contrary, I mean, this is a question over there in Shabbos, whether we're talking about dafka grapes and olives, we're talking about oranges and strawberries. Remember, there were three different dargas of fruits over there, but it's not our business right here. The point is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if initially I had set aside this fruit in order to eat, why would anybody think that I would come to squeeze them just because they leaked out? That was not my intent to use them for that. So therefore, I would say in that case, ayotzim em mutar. The only problem is that if initially you set them aside in order to squeeze, ultimately not on Shabbos, of course, and then when you come back on Shabbos, you see that they leaked out all on their own, well, there it's reasonable to have a chashash that you might actually come to squeeze them. And then I agree that ayotzim em asur. Now, what does that prove, says Rabbi Yochanan in Rabbi Yehuda? That proves that according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is no issue other than the actual worry that you may squeeze it. And when that worry doesn't exist, we're not worried. Okay, now let me ask you something, says Rabbi Yochanan. I mean, are we worried about your squeezing an egg out of a chicken? No. So then that means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we do not have this gezera that's called Mashkin Shezavu, because he's saying it's only where there exists a reasonable chashash. It's not that we assert the mashkin. So then you've got a contradiction. Because you see from this Mishnah, says Rabbi Yochanan, that any food stuff is just considered to be uchla de ifratu. There's no iser mukzer or some kind of new iser on the liquid per se. But here's my problem, Raminu. When it came to the other issue, and this is the story you may remember of the problem that we had in Erevin. Can a person have an Erev for one day that is not the Erev for the next day? Now, what we're talking about over here is Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. And you will recall from Erevin that the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are inherently different than the 2 days of Yontif that we have in Chutz Laretz. Because the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah could often happen even at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash, if the Eidim arrived after Minchas, we're going to discuss later, not today. But the question over there would be, if a guy did not make an Erev, can he make an Erev on the first day of Rosh Hashanah and say that if today is really Rosh Hashanah, so then this Erev is for is not meaningful, okay? But if today is not Rosh Hashanah, I don't need the Erev today, but this should be the Erev for tomorrow, and then the Memanav Shachi would be fine with utilizing that Erev on the next day. And the same thing is true, says Rabbi Yehuda, about taking off Meiser on Rosh Hashanah. Suppose you had things that you didn't take off Meiser from before Rosh Hashanah, you forgot. So what you could do is you could say like this. On the first day of Rosh Hashanah, you say, if today is not really Rosh Hashanah, then I'm taking off this as Meiser. You set aside your Meiser and so on. But if today is Rosh Hashanah, I ain't said nothing. Forget everything I said. So I am hereby mevatel anything that I'm saying if it really is Rosh Hashanah. And then you do exactly the same thing the next day. Well, if yesterday was Chol, then what I'm about to say is nonsense because today's Rosh Hashanah, you can't take off Meiser on Rosh Hashanah. But if yesterday was Rosh Hashanah, and therefore I never did take off the Meiser because I said it's Batal, then I'm taking it off right now because now it's Chol, right? So that's because Rabbi Yehuda holds that the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are never looked at as one long day the way the Chachamim hold because they're innately different. He holds it's a flat-out suffix. Okay. So therefore, matnada makakala shel pirot biyom tov rishon, and then he can eat it on the second day. And, here's where we get into trouble, said Rabbi Yochanan. And if an egg was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, you can definitely eat it on the second day. Because either the first day was not Rosh Hashanah, in which case it was Chol, and then it was laid on a Chol day, which is fine. And if it's the other way around, so then it's Mutter today, because it's not Rosh Hashanah. So it's definitely going to be Mutter one way or the other. Now, wait a minute. But that means that he does hold that an egg was Usher on the first day. Why? If I just showed you that Rabbi Yehuda does not believe that liquids that came out of grapes are Usher, why are eggs that came out of a Tarnagolet that Usher? What kind of weird question is that? I mean, what does eggs have to do with leaking grapes? So you see that Rabbi Yochanan is taken for granted. They have everything to do with leaking grapes. Why? Because Rabbi Yochanan obviously was taken for granted that the problem of a beitza is leaky grapes. And because of this brilliant question, which anybody would think is totally off the wall, unless you're familiar with Rabbi Yitzchak Shita, because of this question, Rabbi Yochanan has to change the Mishnah's girsa and say that actually it was Rabbi Yehuda who said that leaky grapes are usher, and it was the Rabbanan who said, no, only if you intended to squeeze them. Okay, but meanwhile, it's clear that if he's now asking from one sheet of Rabbi Yehuda on another sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, when there's no relationship between the two issues other than Rabbi Yitzchak and Mashkin Shizavu, Shema Minocha Taimu, obviously he holds that that was the entire basis of the problem, of the Beitza Shenolda. Ravina says, you're right, but you don't have to switch the Mishnah around just because of that. Why would you switch the Mishnah? There's a very simple solution. La'olam lo tepuch. There's no need to flip the Mishnah around. I mean, you don't have to go that far. And you can understand that as follows. Rabbi Yehuda himself doesn't believe that there is an Isser of a Beitza Shenolda B'yom Tov, because why should he? He doesn't hold a Mashkin Shezavu. But all Rabbi Yehuda was saying is like this. Listen, according to me, this whole discussion is absurd. I mean, there's no such thing as not being allowed to eat an egg, for heaven's sakes. But you guys who believe that there is such a thing, okay, so according to you who believe that there's this Gezeira Mashkin Shezavu, at least admit that that's only on the first day, but on the second day, Mamanim Shach, it's going to be okay, because the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are completely unrelated, and each one is a suffix, and they're mutually exclusive, right? So why would you ask it on the second day? So Rabbi Yehuda was just saying to Rabbanah like this, listen, gentlemen, I don't believe that there's an Isser in leaky chickens, okay? I think that's crazy. But, I mean, even according to you, according to me, it's Uchla de Yifras, no problem. But even according to you, Leditchu, at least admit, the second day of Rosh Hashanah, it's for sure, we're going to be Mutter Mamanashah, right? Because the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are Shteik Dushote. And the Rabbanu responded, that's not true. We disagree with you, not only about leaky chickens. We disagree with you about the nature of 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is a takana from the beginning. It's all one kedusha. It's not that we look at it each day as a separate suffix. Ravina says, look. I think that both of you are right. And of course, there is a contradiction on the surface in Rabbi Yehuda, but there's a very easy way out of it. And that is, says Ravina Bar Ravula, that the case of laying an egg on Rosh Hashanah was nothing to do with the question of Beitza Shenolda. It was talking about a Tarnagolet HaOmedet LeGadel Beitzim. It wasn't talking about the case you thought it was talking about. It was talking about a Tarnagolet that was actually there for egg production. It was not meant to be eaten, and therefore it is a problem of Mutzah. Rabbi Yehuda says that the egg is Usser because in that case there's the old Rav Nachman problem of Mutzah. The Rav Yehuda always held a Mutzah. What are you talking about, Mashkin Shezofu? You were talking about Mashkin Shezofu because you were thinking that we were referring in that Mishnah to the standard case of Beitzah Shenol to Biyotam, which everybody is claiming about, is talking about a Tanagolet that is Omeret La'achila. No. This is a plain old-fashioned Muktzah Noilat issue, and it's starting to Rabbi Yehuda L'Taimeh, he holds a Muktzah, and that's all. Okay, now let's take a look at these four approaches that we have. We have Rabbi Nachman talking about Muktzah Noilat. We have Rabba talking about a new concept called Achana de Rabba. We have Rabbi Yosef suggesting that there's a broad application of a Gezerah called Perot HaNoshrim. And we have Rabbi Yitzchak who says this is a broad application of a concept called Mashkim Shezavu as a subset of Disha, right? Okay. I want you to explain to me how all those approaches are going to fit into this Braita. Take a look at this Braita. The Braita says like this. Echad Beitzah Shenoldah B'Shabbat, Ve'echad Beitzah Shenoldah B'Yom Tov, Ein Metatalino Tar, you're not allowed to move it. You're not allowed to use it for covering over a jar. And of course, that primary use of eggs where you have an uneven bed, you put an egg under the leg of the bed that's uneven just to hold up your bed, which of course is what everybody really uses eggs for. It's absolutely hilarious. So most people don't even know that you can use an egg to support 200 pounds simply by putting it in precisely the position in which all of the weight is concentrated on the point of the egg. And the incredible physics of it is that, yes, the egg will support the bed. Don't try this at home with your wife around, though. So now, okay, so you can take this egg, you know, on a regular day, but you cannot do that if it was just laid today. However, you could take a bowl and put it over the egg in case the egg might break. How could an egg break if it could support hundreds of pounds? Well, it might be on the right angle, wrong angle. You know, believe it or not, you can actually break an egg if you try hard enough. So anyway, that you could do. So this comes to address the question of, is a dover that is muktzah, can other things be carried for that? That was a machlokes. Remember, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, ein kli mitaltel el the dover anito b'shabbos, and he had to explain this away. And Shamsi, he explained it away by saying you were carrying it anyway because it was a kli shabalach taliyah. So, okay, again, that shouldn't bother us now. Now, here's what bothers me, says the Gemara. In a case where it's a suffix, so then it still remains us. And not only that, if this egg is what it seems to be saying. If this egg, now it's not clear what this egg is. Is this egg the Suffolk egg? Is this egg the Vadai egg? Okay, that's not clear. If this egg becomes mixed with another 1,000 eggs, then all of these eggs are us. Now, here's my problem. If you hold of Rabbi, who says that there's this new idea of a Chana de Rabbi, now, that would explain why if it's a Suffolk egg, it's a Suffolk d'oraisa. Get this. It says over here, Beferish, that according to Rabbah, Hachana is a d'oraisa. And that's the reason why the Suffolk is usher, because Suffolk d'oraisa is l'chumra. How does the Rambam say that it's a gezer? How does he ignore the Beferish of Mishnah? Beferish of Gemara over here. The Gemara says, Avi Sveika d'oraisa, v'chol Sveika d'oraisa is v'chumra. But according to Rabbi Yosef, and according to Rabbi Yitzchak, who says that this is this wild interpretation of the Gezerah of Mashkin Shezavu or Peros that fell down off of a tree, it's a Sveika d'rabbanan. A Sveika d'rabbanan goes l'kula. He says, but you don't understand. The last part of the Braisa, when it said this egg, was referring to this egg that we were discussing about at Beitzah Shenol D'Ayanta. It was talking about problem eggs. I mean, we're just talking about eggs. We're talking about problem eggs of all kinds. The problem eggs of all kinds include a egg that turns out that when I now go ahead and I check the mother of this egg and I find out that the mother was a trefa. Oh my gosh. So we had a 1,000 eggs and we checked it. I don't have any idea which mommy this egg came from. And now it turns out that one of them was a trefa. Now we have a Suffolk trefa egg. I don't care if there's 1,000 other eggs. Then you're not going to be able to eat it. So that's coming to tell me a Suffolk Trefa. Excuse me? I understand the Suffolk Trefa is usher, but why in the world is a Suffolk Trefa egg that get mixed up with 1,000 eggs? Who ever heard of such a thing? Why would a Suffolk Trefa egg not be bottle barov? Ah, now let me tell you something. If it was a Suffolk Beitza Shenolda, there's a very good reason why it wouldn't be bottle barov. You know what that reason is? It's a Dover Shiesh Lo Matirin. Anything which you could eat in complete heter by simply waiting, we don't let you be mevatel barov. That's an gezeirah derabbanan. Fine. So today you want to eat this egg, and today it's yontev, and maybe it's a beit shishah, so wait till tomorrow. Tomorrow will be kosher. So what are you telling me? Well, you're not going to eat any of these eggs. That's correct. You'll wait until tomorrow, and you won't be semech anbit. Okay, I mean, that I can understand. But if you're talking about a beitz of a trefa, what? Why wouldn't it be bottle? All these serum in the Torah are bottle. So I can't wait till tomorrow to eat an egg that might be a trefa, can I? So how do you explain that? Z'yoki ema sefa. Nit'arva be'elev kulam asurot. I mean, if you're going to tell me that we're talking about this egg, Suffolk, Yomtev, Suffolk, Chol, I don't know what got mixed up with other eggs and whatever. Maybe this is a Yomtev egg, maybe this is a Chol egg. I can understand that it's a Dover Shiesh Lo Matirin. V'chol Dover Shiesh Lo Matirin is never going to be bato. Afilo be'elev lo bato, because you can wait till tomorrow. But if you're going to tell me that we're talking about at the end over here, the Brayta, Suffolk Trefa, then it's a Dover She'en Lo Matirin. And a Dover She'en Lo Matirin is always bato barov. Now I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me the old standby, that since the egg is a discernible unit of great chashivas, it's not considered to be bought. So therefore, it's a gezeirah, like a beautiful piece of meat. You know, okay, so beitza is chashuvah below betela. Now that leads us into a real thicket of problems, which is, what makes things something to be so chashiv that it won't be bought? And that turns out to be a machlokas. Now, one approach is that anything that can be sold often by unit is kosher. Okay, so then eggs are sold by unit. I want to buy one egg and I'll pay for one egg. So I could understand according to that mandiyomar, only according to that mandiyomar, would the egg be kosher. But if you hold according to the other approaches, which are things that are only sold by unit, or as we'll see, things that are very chashev because of their size, their expense, or the investment in them of work or whatever, eggs don't exactly make the grade. So what are you going to say? So v'chitema beitza es chashev v'lo betela. That depends. So kol shedarko limanot shaninu. If, we're going to see what that means in a moment. The question is, Rabbi Meir Shita, that we're about to learn about, is that anything which it's typically sold by unit, right? So if kol shedarko limanot means, okay, things that are sold by units, happens very often, then an egg would be included. But what about if you understand the word is not really meant to be understood as anything which is darko limanot, but et shedarko limanot. Et shedarko limanot means anything which is exclusively sold by unit. So then that would not include eggs. If you want to buy an egg in China, you pay for it by the kilogram. So too in Mexico. And there's lots of places you can buy wholesale eggs by kilo. This is not sold only or just by estimation, which is even worse. You know, okay, give me a bushel of eggs. Oh, I mean, a bushel of eggs? Yeah, you know, how many eggs are there? I don't know, somewhere between 106 and 113, do I know? I mean, whatever it is, I'll take the bushel. So that can happen also, so that you wouldn't include eggs. How are you going to explain the price then? Because you're not dealing with the Dover Shiesh Lo Matirin, and you're not dealing with the Dover Chashev, which means you've got no choice but to admit that the Brisa was talking about a Dover Shiesh Lo Matirin, a Dover which is an Issur D'oraisa, and therefore it's not going to be batal. And so, and it is talking about the question of the, or it's talking about a Dover Shiesh Lo Matirin, it's talking about Dafka, the Isser of the Beitzim. It's not. Misha Yulo Chavile Tiltan Shekolayaka. Where is this whole idea of Eshedaka, Limnos, Koshedaka? This is a famous case where somebody's got bundles of what Rashi says is fenugreek, which sounds awfully like fenugreek to me. So you've got these bundles of fenugreek that had grown in a vineyard. So they're also because of kilayah. You have to burn them. How about if they got mixed up with others and others got mixed up with others? Now, this part is not really necessarily the correct girsa, because if these get mixed up with others and the others get mixed up with others, then according to many shitas, we will then have to be mako because as a din of a sveik sveika. And a double mixture is first the one that came out is a suffik, and then the second one is viewed as a sveik sveika, and a sveik sveika is mutter even in the diraisa. Because of that, the Rabbeinu Tam takes out this girsa of acheros ba'acheros. But this is really a big machlokas in the Rishonim, how we view two different levels of bitol. So we won't talk about that here. This is like a major issue all over Shas. But in any event, the din over here is that if you have this kind of mixture, you have to burn all of them, because this we learn pentugdash, we are derish, pentukad esh. You may be brought to a situation if you allow things to grow in your vineyard, in which you're going to have to make a big fire, you're going to have to burn them up. Okay. So says Rebbe Meir. Chachamim say, well, understand, what's the problem? What happened to bittul? Oh, you say, the Rabbanan asered bittul bakilayim? Not totally. They just upped the scale. So bittul midiraisa is berov. Bittul midirabbanan, okay, some things, if it's truma, we demand 100 to 1. If it's kilayim, then we demand 200 to 1. But what are you telling me, afil be'elef? Why would it not be bittul? Yalu ba'achatumatayim. If it's 200 to 1, you could take out one, throw it away, and then you could use the rest. Shaya Rebbe Meir Omer. So Rebbe Meir would say, here's the machlokes. Why did Rebbe Meir say they all need to be burned? Because Rebbe Meir said anything that is darko limanot, like this fenugreek, and it's sold by package, which is one unit, so then it is mikadesh. It actually, mikadesh is the pentukdash. We're using Lashon HaBatzer to talk about Aser and Kelayim, everything becomes Aser. The Chachamim, however, disagree, and they say, no, there's only six things in the world, Rabbi Akiva says, seven things, obviously, is all socially determined at the time, and these are things that are extremely important, very valuable, imported from overseas, or whatever the situation is, and what they include are egoze perech, these are a type of very expensive nut, Rimone Badan, of these names of places. Badan is a place where they have these incredibly delicious large pomegranates. Chaviot Stumot, whole sealed barrels of wine. Chilfei Tradin is a certain type of beets. Kilchei Kruv, these are the Kruv of Eretz Yisrael that are gigantic, as big as a tree. Dalat Yevanit, and of course, we have these Greek pumpkins. I mean, if they're both Greek and pumpkin, I mean, they're irresistible. And Rabbi Akiva adds, Kikrot Shopa Alabai. So, a woman's challahs for Shabbos, I mean, you know, what you put in your woman, they're absolutely unique. There's bad. You can't be Mavato, that kind of thing. Your wife will kill you. So, because of that, that would be included as well. So, I mean, some of these things obviously can't be Kiloya Kerem, you know, they're trees, but they could be Orla. So the things that are Orla-oriented, the things that can grow in the vineyard, fine, I'm talking about the vineyard, whatever it is, but the case that right in Kiloya Kerem is Kiloya Kerem. Okay, now, what does this have to do with? What it has to do with is the Machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to what Rabbi Meir meant about the fenugreek. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar is getting a little bit complicated, right? But we're on pop-down level number 17 here. So as it says, the Rabbi Yochanan said, what Rabbi Meir said was that the fenugreek is not considered to be ever bottle, even be'elef, because anything which is etchadakalunna, if it's sold exclusively by unit. Whereas Reish Lakish says, no, that's not what he said. He said, Kol shedaka lino. That's where this comes from, this whole discussion. Is an egg an etchedaka lino? No. Is it a kol shedaka lino? Yes. So, okay, says the one, look, if you hold that kol shedaka lino, like Rav Shimon ben Lakish, so then I understand why it would make sense that we would not be able to be mavatal an egg that's treifa. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, I mean, why wouldn't it be batal afilu be'elef? Unless we're talking about a bet shenol de miyantiv, and we're not, and therefore it's going to be okay now and to tomorrow, and therefore we can't be mevatel it. Ah, says Rav Papa, you've made this a binary problem, huh? Is it Rav Yochanan? Is it Reish Lakish? Well, that's very convenient, because in fact there is a completely different Tana who would say that eggs cannot be batal, and that is the Tana about litra ketziot. Ketziot are dried figs, and what we do with those dried figs after they're dried for a while in the field is we press them into these molds, and these molds then create what do they call it in English? Fig butter? When it's, you can't see the figs anymore, but it's like, gosh.
I don't know. A fig cake.
What's that?
Fig cake.
Fig cake. Yeah, fig cake, right. Yeah. So these are fig cakes in English. So ultimately, and then you slice it, and you sell it by slice. So this is very, very concentrated fig, and that Tana holds that even the Tana of Litra Ketzios, he holds kol davar shebiminyan. Now this is not kol shedarko limnot, this is not et shedarko limnot, this is something which even once in a while you may sell by unit is itself already chashev enough not to be bottled. And that would be even in a drabana koshkin, if we're talking about a giraisa, in the case of the trefa, if you want to tell me that we're talking about a trefa egg, and we're not talking about an egg that was null to be yontav, so koshkin, that's nine, and that is the Mishnah, which talks about a litra ketzia, shedrasa api igol. You press a litra of dried figs into a mold, ve'inu yodea ba'ezi igol drasa, now you don't know which mold you put it into. Oh, heck. Or you put it into a barrel. You don't know which barrel you put it. Oh, gosh. Or al pi kaveret. Ve'ino yodea be'ezi kaveret dar. So now all of these were truma, right? We're talking about over here. And now you've got truma mixed in with the chulin. And shoot. Rabbi Meir says that there's a machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, what the din is. Which we'll get into on Mitzvah Shabbos, Bezrat Hashem. And that's the question about whether we look at only the top, because it was the most recent thing that you pressed in. Can we separate the tops out of all of them, or do we look at it as if each part is mixed? That we'll talk about. But what I want to get to today is just to point out to you the way the totality of the sugya is so much more complex and so much more beautiful, according to the Rambam. The big problem in the Rambam is that the Rambam actually holds that the din, as I said, of Hachana Darabba is correct, but it's a Darabbana, which totally contradicts our Gemara. And the other problem is that in explaining the Mishnah over here, according to Reb Nachman, which he does, he says, based on our Sugya, you see that when it comes to Yontev, we go L'chumra in terms of Muktza, and when it comes to Shabbos, we go L'kula according to Rabbi Shimon, in terms of Moksa. So he is basically taking both Pshatim in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, as true, which, like, in the Gemara, these are alternatives. And it was because of the rejection of Reb Nachman into the Pshat of Achon Ed Rabba that almost all of the Rishonim paskin against the distinction of Yontav and Shabbos of Reb Nachman, but would paskin like Achon Ed Rabba, but say that Achon Ed Rabba is a derisa, the way our Gemara says. Now, the Rambam paskins both, but neither. Because he doesn't really paskin Achana Darabba, because he says Achana Darabba is a Darabbana. Now, what the heck is going on? So I must tell you, my late cousin, Rabinowitz, Rav Nachum Rabinowitz, who was Nifter last year, I think it was, had a brilliant, he wrote a set of massive Pirushim on the Rambam. What was it called? The Yad, do you remember Barnea again? I just slipped my mind this moment.
I think also Yad HaRambam or something.
No. Okay.
Yeah. The black books and the Menachem set on the shelf.
It's a beautiful set. Yeah. Anyway, so the way that he understands this sugya is really beautiful. Because what he points out is like this. That first of all, the Gemara Pesachim tries to use the pasuk of Echinat Asher Yaviu, which is Rava's pasuk, as a basis for muktza. And the Gemara is deicha, the drasha, and says it cannot be a deoraisa. So because of that, the Rambam paskins that limudim from this pasuk cannot be diraz. They're only as markers. Not based on our sugya, based on that sugya.
But Yad Pshuta.
Yad Pshuta, yes, thank you. Yeah. So the question is, okay, what is really the basis of the whole idea of Muktzah when it comes to Yontif? So remember yesterday, what we talked about was the big machlokas we showed you as to how to view the Isser of Muktzah Bichlal. And is that Isser of Muktzah, the way the Rambam understands it, the Isser of Muktzah is a positive gezer, meaning that Muktzah is there, not the way everybody else learns to prevent you from coming to X, Y, and Z, but Muktzah, which exists only on Yontev in its pure form, as we came out over here in Paskins, this Gemara, Muktzah is there to make your Yontev happy. Because if we allowed you to do all of the kind of stuff that you're really allowed to do on Yontev, in order to make things be Ochel Nefesh, you know what your Yontev would turn into? It would turn into a typical Arab Shabbos. Of mad rushing to get sudas ready and so on, and the women screaming, and you're making my kitchen dirty, get out of the kitchen, and stuff like that. And in order to avoid that type of yanta, so Chazal were koveya, that you can't just run around and do things. And basically, anything that you need to do would need to be prepared before. Prepared before. Doesn't that sound familiar? Yes, it does. It's called Vehechino et Asher Yaviu. So what the Rambam really understands is that Hachana de Rabba is the basis of Muktzah on Yantar. And therefore, in the end, what the sugya of the Gemara is saying, that if you put Reb Nachman and Rabba together, now you get a beautiful understanding of the deeper concept of Beitzah Shenol de Yantar, which is there to change the ambience of Yantar. And that's necessary because of the difference between Yontev and Shabbos, which makes it the fundamental beginning of our Masechta. It's beautiful. So if that's what the Rambam is saying, then not only is there not a contradiction between the two, they're actually in deep need of each other. So that the idea of Muktzah on Yontev is an extension of the concept of Vayichinu Tashar Yaviu in a positive sense, not a reason for an Isser, but a reason for why we will constrain your yontif to be more prepared. Aha. So if that's the case, it is not a deraisa. It's entirely derabbanan. It's an extension of the overall concept of muktzah, which we end up not using, because on Shabbos we won't use it to say things that are muktzah. But it's based on the idea that the Torah wants things done in a general sense. Have a good Shabbos. On Shabbos, you won't go out to collect it in the field. On Yontif, you won't go out to collect it in the field. Have a good Yontif and enjoy yourselves. Don't forget the Shechayanu. Okay, so beautiful. That simply ties everything together. It's like, wow. And it just makes this Mishnah the only Mishnah you would expect to be right at the beginning of the Sechus Yontif. Isn't that just lovely?